Hey, remember Rocky? Boy, what a movie.
Yeah.
The best scene was when Stallone kept hitting that side of beef. Remember that? He kept hitting that side of beef, just smashing it with his fist till it was all raw. Hit, smash, hit, make it all bloody. You sure did a job on that beef.
Nick?
Yo?
You ever see any Disney pictures?
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of The Complete Works, an official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey through a fascinating career is my good friend and Filmbook cast co-host, Mike DiCriscio. How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I'm excited for this potentially long and arduous task.
Exactly. Now, the idea for The Complete Works was a simple one. We thought it would be fun exercise to go through an actor's entire filmography, film by film, breaking down each role and seeing how that actor evolved over time, as well as seeing the ups and downs of their career and how they respond to it. Now, there were a lot of actors that me and Mike considered for this exercise. The selection was based on three criteria. The actor has to be somebody that both me and Mike are big fans of. Above all, we want to be enthusiastic throughout this podcast, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's always a good help.
Number two, the actor has to have a long and diverse career. Seeing an actor grow over the course of 30 years holds more weight behind it than an actor whose career is only 5 years in. And three, the actor had to be somebody who had great appeal to the internet, somebody who we thought was popular enough to warrant an entire podcast devoted to their life's work. Now, with all that in mind, Mike and I decided there was only one person who could possibly be the first to get the Complete Works treatment. And that, my friends, is actor Nicolas Cage.
That's right. This is happening.
Born Nicholas Coppola, the nephew of director Francis Ford Coppola, he changed his last name to Cage to avoid charges of nepotism in Hollywood, naming himself after one of his favorite Marvel Comics characters, Luke Cage. Cage is well known for his acting style, and in particular, how wildly he can vary, not even from film to film, but sometimes from scene to scene. His over and under acting is something that has been a recurring joke for years, but I don't think it has been explored to this deep of an extent. Since making his debut in 1981, Nicolas Cage has appeared in over 70 films, and today, Mike and I are going to begin our insane, misguided journey into watching each and every one. And so, let's begin taking a look at Nicolas Cage's first on-screen appearance, 1981's Best of Times. Are you ready, Mike?
I am. This is going to be ridiculous, but let's do it.
All right. Now, Best of Times was directed by Don Mischer and written by Bob Arnott, Carol Hatfield Sarasone, and Lane Sarasone. The film stars Nicolas Cage in his acting debut as Nicholas, and also features Crispin Glover, also making his acting debut, Jackie Mason, Julie Pekarsky, Jill Sholin, Kevin Cortez, David Rambo, Janet Robin, and Lisa Hope Ross. So, Best of Times was originally written as the first episode of a series, though it never made it past this pilot. Mike, can you... Do you have any idea why that is?
Probably because it's the worst thing of all time.
All right,
so I won't go that far. But
Mike has made his feelings clear on the subject.
Yeah.
Does not sound like you were a fan of Best of Times, Mike.
No, this was the worst of times. It was not. Yeah, I don't. It's just like weird, disjointed skits that don't make sense. I mean, that might also be because now it's 2015, it's not 1981 anymore.
Sure.
but it was bizarre.
Yeah, Best of Times is an odd show.
Yeah, to say the least.
Right, so this, I debated whether we should talk about Best of Times as, like, part of the Complete Works, because we were trying to stick to films, but
right.
I'm pretty sure this is the only time Nicolas Cage has ever been on a TV show, and it was his
almost.
First.
Almost. Almost a TV.
Almost okay. A TV show. And this was the first time Nicolas Cage was ever in anything, so I felt like it was significant enough. And we didn't. It's not like we had to watch an entire show, because it never made it past the pilot. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Best of Times is this weird sketch comedy variety show hybrid starring teenagers, about as good as you'd expect from that description. The IMDb page of this thing is very bare.
Yeah, it's, what does it say? It's an 80s-style laughing?
Yes, that is correct. There's one user review.
Is there really? I didn't even see that.
Yeah, there's one user review of Best of Times on IMDb. It's several... It's like 10 stars.
Oh, God.
It says, this is one of the best TV shows ever. The guy seems to be a huge fan of Crispin Glover. I mean, hey, different strokes for different folks, I guess.
Yeah.
But... most of the cast of the show has gone on into obscurity at this point, except for Nicolas Cage, Crispin Glover, and Jackie Mason. Jill Schoenlein was in a few horror movies in the late 80s.
Yeah, I did see that on there. But I thought it was really weird that they were all playing characters that were their own names.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know. just weird. According to the IMDb page, Betty Glover played Crispin Glover's mom.
I assume that's Crispin Glover's mom.
That's what I mean. I don't understand why they were all themselves. Except for Jackie Mason.
Except for Jackie Mason, yeah. Well, because he was the famous guy.
He's the star of this. He's the only good part of this show, I think.
Yeah, basically, anytime Jackie Mason's on screen, it just goes into his stand-up act.
But I'm down. Like, that was funny.
Like, he's just spouting off one-liners here and there. And it's, you know, it's Jackie Mason one-liners. Like, it's funny.
It's funny.
So, Best of Times essentially centers around a group of teenagers just trying to make it in this crazy world of high school life, man.
That's right.
IMDb description compares it to Laugh-In. But, like, Laugh-In's definitely something that seems like an influence on the show. And this show actually precedes what I'm about to say, but it really reminds me of Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, by like 10 years.
Yeah, the show debuted in 1981. Saved by the Bell was 1989. But the main character, played by Crispin Glover, addresses the audience in the same way as Zach Morris does, and has like the same kind of inflections, and seems like a very similar character.
Yeah, that's good. That's very perceptive of you.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
In any case, the cast comprises of Crispin Glover as this protagonist. Nicolas Cage is the jock, I guess.
I guess.
I guess that would be what he is.
Yeah, the meathead.
Then there's Kevin, the nerd. Julie, the cheerleader. David, the hard worker. Lisa, who works out and is hungry all the time.
Just the fat girl.
Yeah.
It's like, really? Come on, this is happening.
Jill, who is pretty and mature. And Janet, who wants to be in a band. Those are their character descriptions that are given by Crispin Glover in the beginning of this movie.
Yeah, and that's their whole arc, too.
That is their entire arc. I think if anybody has an arc in this, it would probably be Kevin, the nerd, who goes on a journey of trying to get a date to the dance.
Yeah, and he struggles real hard.
Fails miserably for a really long time, and then ends up going to the dance with the cheerleader, who accepts his offer off screen. they don't show them. They don't show her saying yes. They're just at the dance.
It just happens.
Yep. So the idea of the show is to appeal to teenagers, I guess.
I would assume.
Crispin Glover directly to the camera says, like, teenagers aren't so bad, you guys. Don't give us such a hard time.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. The show was brought to you by Charmin.
Super soft. I don't know if you heard.
Yeah. During the Best of Times intro, it says, like, oh, brought to you by Charmin. This is a really... If I had to point at something, if somebody asked me, what was the 1980s like? I would just be like, I would pull up Best of Times on YouTube and say, here you go.
I would just show them the scene where Crispin goes into the 7-Eleven looking for the new Talking Heads tape.
That was one of my favorite scenes.
That was the weirdest thing of all time.
Yeah, he goes in there asking for the Talking Heads tape, like freaking out about it too.
So hyped.
And my favorite part where he just shouts, "It's real!" and his voice cracks while he's saying it.
Yep.
Crispin Glover's voice cracks a lot during this, actually. I feel like he was like right in the middle of puberty or something.
This is the most I've ever seen Crispin Glover talk.
thing is, Crispin Glover gives one of my favorite comedic performances of all time in Back to the Future. Yes. And this role, in a lot of ways, echoes that.
is the precursor.
Is the precursor to George McFly in some ways.
I didn't think of it that way, but you're right.
But there's I really like Crispin Glover as like a presence. Mm-hmm. And I think in this and in Back to the Future, he has like a dorky sincerity that helps sell what he's trying to do.
I agree with that.
So that was a really entertaining scene. What did you think of the musical numbers in the Best of Times?
I was going to say, can we please talk about the musical numbers?
Yeah, they are...
So the first one is at the convenience store, or right. 7-Eleven.
Right, and it's like an improv, just kind of...
They kind of like...
Hit whatever you can, make a beat out of it kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't get it. It was the weirdest thing of all time.
And it's mostly there just to annoy Jackie Mason's character.
Right. So I was like, okay, whatever. Like, that's fine. And I was then, like, all right, that's just a bad skit. Okay.
Yeah. And then a few sketches later...
they were working at the car wash.
Yeah, they work at the car wash and start singing 9 to 5.
Yeah, that's the only way to live life.
In that scene, Nicolas Cage is shirtless, wearing overalls, dancing.
Oh, my God. A hoedown. They dance a hoedown.
Yes, they do. It's a really bizarre sequence. And yeah. Then there's another musical number.
Time it's a chores rap.
Yeah, it's an original chores rap where all the kids are singing about their chores, which is also really silly. And then another musical number after that in which Crispin Glover is in like a weird fantasy sequence where he's trying on jeans at a mall. And all the girls start singing Heartbreaker to him by Pat Benatar.
Yeah, that's right. It's even weirder than that. It starts off with Jill, I think.
Yeah.
Bemoaning the fact that jeans are so expensive now.
Yeah, Jill has this long monologue about designer jeans.
Yeah. And it's so hard out here for a teenager.
Yeah, and how like the Pilgrims like originally created jeans out of denim because it was cheap, and now they're all like expensive designer jeans. And yeah. It's very bizarre. It's really weird. This is a really weird show, guys.
Yeah. There's one... It made me really uncomfortable because it's like kind of like a weird under theme. It like highly sexualizes all of these characters.
Yes.
And they're supposed to be really young. And I don't understand it.
Yes. The Heartbreaker scene in particular is really weird.
Yeah.
It goes on for a long time.
It's like the whole song. And it's like almost.
The three girl characters are just all over Crispin Glover during this scene.
Yeah,
it's weird. It's definitely odd.
There's also the scene in with that tone when Kevin is calling. You know, it's actually kind of funny when he calls his one friend and asks if she wants to go to the dance. She says no, and he's like, "Could I talk to your sister then?" And he goes all the way through the whole family, and the youngest sister is like, "Oh yeah, I'll go with you." And he's like, "Oh great, how old are you?" And she's like, 10. And it's like, "Oh, what the fuck?" No,
yeah, that was bizarre. It was an odd joke. I actually enjoyed Kevin a little bit. I thought he...
I think he's the real hero.
Yeah, I think he... I thought his performance was pretty funny. And I actually looked at that character's IMDb page, and he was never in anything after this.
A lot of these people weren't.
Yeah. There's also one... there's one person in the IMDb page playing a character named Jogger. And I don't remember who she was, but the actress's name is Anita Mann.
Okay.
Which sounds like a Bart Simpson prank call.
It does. It really does. Oh my God.
And she was in a lot of looks like she was a crew in a lot of stuff. But she was in some other things like the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour.
Wow.
An episode of the Mission Impossible TV series. Like, she was an actress in a few things. Looks like she was a crew member on a lot of other stuff. But it's just. Like, her name sounds like something that Bart would prank call to Mo Sizlak.
Absolutely. That's amazing.
And there's a lot of, like, weird non sequiturs in this in the show. Like, they would just cut to, like, a 10-second clip of, like, the girls doing makeup. Somebody would say a joke. And then they would, like,
yeah,
cut to another thing.
The scene when it's Kevin and the hard worker guy. I don't remember his name. When they're playing pinball, and he's like, "You know, man, we just need more peace and love in this world." And they get all like mad and smash the pinball machines. Like, what? Well, I don't. It was weird.
Yeah,
it's a lot of things that I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff where I'm just dumbfounded. Like, this was this happened. This is like yeah, this existed.
This is a scene. Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine this show. It's hard to imagine what the show would have been like if it had been picked up for.
I agree. You know, I can't. More. Like, this is weird that this was like an attempt to make a series out of this, because I don't know what it could have been.
Yeah, I mean, and plus, here's the thing: it's mostly going for laughs. I would say, right?
Yeah,
like, it's mostly trying to be a funny show, and then it gets really intense during certain moments. We're going to talk about this a little bit later when we like discuss Nicolas Cage's performance in full. But yes. Nicolas Cage has this really long monologue about the war in El Salvador.
Yeah.
And his father's disappointment in him. And it goes on for maybe like 3 full minutes. And
it's really weird.
And it's really like dark.
Yeah.
It's not trying to be funny. It's not trying to be like cute. It's just like this really lengthy monologue, and it's like sad and it's intense, and it's actually a pretty good indication of the kind of actor that Nicolas Cage can be.
Yeah, that's actually true. Yeah.
So we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Let's talk about Crispin and Jill and their relationship.
Yeah.
Did you think these crazy kids would get together in the end, man?
I don't know. Once we heard about their sex dreams.
Yes,
which we get the euphemisms for, but
yeah. Yeah, I think my favorite line in this is when Crispin is trying to explain to Jill what his dream was, and like he says it to her, and then he's like he's trying to explain to her why she should be his girlfriend, and he's like, yeah. "Well, I don't find you physically unattractive."
That was a very Marty George McFly moment. You're right.
So that was funny, and yeah. So Crispin and Jill, you know, they're I guess they're. The kids you're supposed to root for. They don't get together in the end, but they have dreams about each other.
Yeah.
And I guess you're expected to root for them as if the series is supposed to go on.
Keep going, yeah.
From this point.
Then what about Crispin's weird monologue about his parents dancing? Before the school dance. And he's, like, talking about it. He's like, oh, whenever my parents met at a school dance, and, you know, whenever they dance at home, I have to shut the blinds so the neighbors don't see. So this is really weird. Like everything just made me uncomfortable about this show.
I don't know, I do remember a monologue he had. It might have been the same thing where he was talking about how his dad works like all the time, and like his mom will ask his dad on Friday, like, "Oh, you need some rest. Like you're good." And then like yeah. over the weekend, she'll make him do a bunch of chores around the house.
That happens. That comes up before the chores wrap.
Right. Yeah, you're right. Yes. A lot of the – yeah, all the – some of the sketches lead into the other sketches, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah, there is some continuity.
A little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
But it's mostly non sequiturs. Like it's mostly cut to this, somebody will say a joke. Cut to this, somebody will say a joke. Cut to this, this person will have a monologue.
Cut to this song.
Yeah.
Like, I don't get it.
And I – like the part about the songs, like – they're all terrible. Like, like, these are not good songs.
I kind of want the chores rap as a ringtone.
Yeah, I was hoping to... maybe I'll find the chores rap and put that as the...
that is the song.
Put that as the song in the opening of the podcast.
Oh, my God.
If I can find it. Like, that's the thing. This is actually a pretty difficult show to find.
Luckily, it's on YouTube.
Luckily, somebody has uploaded it on YouTube, but it's not available on DVD. And it's not available through any other streaming services. Yeah. So if this person takes it off YouTube, it's gone forever.
It's gone. No one will ever see it.
And that'll be a shame, because this is a really... it's a really bizarre cultural...
artifact.
Artifact, yeah. This is very, like I said, this is a very 1981 yes. thing. Did you think there's a lot of pinball in this...
There was, like, too much pinball.
There's a little bit too much pinball. Like, it seemed like every other scene was them playing pinball.
Basically. I mean, maybe that's what 1981 was like, man. Yeah. I don't know.
You were also talking about how they over-sexualized the characters. There's yeah. a scene where the girls meet up and talk about how they all saw the boys without their swimsuits.
Oh, God, yeah. And it goes on for, like, a long time.
Yeah. And it's like, it was weird, like... I was not aware that boys didn't wear swimsuits in their swimming class, which I guess you said your dad could attest to that.
Yeah, well, my dad would always said that he's the youngest of his brothers, and he was the first year in his high school that they were allowed to wear swim trunks.
That is,
so he would always make fun of his brothers for it, my uncles for it.
That is so weird to me. Like,
I don't know why the hell that was a thing.
What is the point of not wearing swim trunks?
Yeah, I don't know.
And so...
So it could lead to wacky antics like this.
they didn't wear swim trunks just so Best of Times could have like a little bit of material to work with.
They just needed a little bit of whimsy in their day, Mike. That's all.
And the girls, like, saw the boys without their swimsuits, and they discuss, like, oh, this is the first time I've ever seen a naked boy. And
yeah.
It was, like, cool. Like,
good for you, I guess.
And yeah. It's a weird show, man.
I don't know if we can emphasize that enough.
Yeah. But in any case, so I guess we've emphasized enough. This is a very weird show. We've discussed at length why this is a weird show. But let's discuss the Cage Man.
The man himself.
Let's discuss the man who we're all here to talk about today.
Yes.
Nicolas Cage. So Nicolas Cage plays Nicola. Not Nicola. Nicolas.
Yeah. Wrong person.
Nicolas Cage plays Nicolas on this show. And Nicolas Cage... I keep saying Nicolas Cage because his character is Nicolas, and I just keep, like, accidentally saying Cage. Nicolas is, like, the jock character. He's constantly working out. Like, if you ever see, like, whenever he's on screen, he's always doing push-ups, or he's lifting weights, or he's, like, doing pull-ups or something. One of my favorite scenes in Nicolas Cage has some of my favorite scenes in this movie because there's some prime Cage moments that that I had never seen before. That's the thing. I've seen a lot of, like, you know, when people think of Nicolas Cage moments, you know, they think of Vampire's Kiss, they think of The Wicker Man, you know, they think of, like, the stuff where he goes nuts in. And here's the thing.
This happened. It happens in this.
Yeah, there's some weird scenes in this movie. There's a scene early on where Nicolas Cage is, like, I think it's his first scene. Like, I think it's the first scene that he's in.
Yeah.
He's, like, with Kevin, and Kevin's, like, eating... at the table next to him, and Nicolas Cage just starts reenacting Rocky.
Yes.
He's like, oh, did you ever see Rocky, man? Oh, he's punching the side beef. He's punching the side beef. Ah!
It just goes on for a while. And the note I wrote down that this is the Nicolas Cage we will see in 20 years.
Yeah. This is the Nicolas Cage who would appear in Face Off and go nuts. Like,
yes.
Oh, he's making it all bloody, man. He's making it all bloody. And then Kevin decides he can't eat anymore because he's like...
It's all grossed out.
He's all grossed out. He's like, ah, Nicolas, what? Didn't you ever watch any Disney movies?
Yeah. That's it. End the scene.
So, yeah, it's the end of the scene. That was the joke to go out on.
Yeah. Bizarre.
And then there's another scene... shortly after that, Nicolas Cage and Kevin again, where Nicolas Cage impersonates Kevin, trying to talk to girls. And one of the lines he says is, have a donut.
I didn't even pick up on that.
He's like, oh, I'm Kevin, have a donut, yes.
Hi, how you doing? Yeah, I saw your book report today. Yeah, oh, have a donut, yes. What does that say to people?
And which is weird. And then he describes how he talks to girls, and he has a great line where Nicolas Cage says, I am the most beautiful man you have ever seen. My magnificent biceps drive you wild with desire.
It's insane.
Yeah, he is. Also, Nicolas Cage is, like, almost constantly shirtless in this.
Or at least in muscle shirts. Yeah.
Yeah, he's always like sporting his abs. Which he had at the time.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen. But yeah, that scene was actually pretty funny when he tries to get Kevin to talk, when Kevin talks to the girl.
Yeah.
That skit.
The thing is, there's a couple of, like, individually pretty funny scenes that are just wrapped in, like...
Just insanity.
Weirdly structured terribleness.
Yeah.
There's some great Nicolas Cage faces in this movie. Particularly, he points out his biceps to the girl.
A lot.
Yeah. But, like, after, like, Kevin fails talking to that girl, he, like, points it out to her, and he's like, hey there. He, like, has, like, his eyebrows raised, and he's doing, like, the,
He's like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. And then that's the girl that he ends up at the dance with.
Oh, my God, you're right. I didn't even notice that.
Yes.
Wow.
And then there's the scene of Nicolas Cage in overalls dancing. No shirt, just overalls.
Classic car wash.
Yes, classic car wash. He's got like a hose, and he's just dancing along with it, and it's really, like, it's weird, man.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say about most of this show is that it's just weird as hell.
Yes, but then after all that, we discussed this briefly. Nicolas Cage has this very lengthy monologue about the war in El Salvador and how he might be drafted into it. And it's not going for laughs. It's not going for anything close to what the show is trying to do up until this point. It's towards the end.
He talks about his dad in Korea.
Talks about his dad in Korea and how, like, his dad wants him to go to war to be a man.
Yeah.
And how, you know, he's like, oh, well, at least I'll have college next year if I keep my grades up. But
wait, I like that. We forgot earlier. There's a moment where Nicholas says to Kevin, I think, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm having trouble deciding between Stanford or Harvard. And Kevin's like, oh, there's no surfing at Harvard. He's like, that settles that. It's like, wait, that I don't know if that's like, oh, he's so dumb, that's the joke? Or, like, I don't get it.
I guess
it
was weird.
But he's having trouble keeping his grades up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I have college next year, as long as I keep my grades up. But I've never had that good grades.
Yeah.
And then he just, like, wanders silently along the beach.
Forlornly.
He says,
I don't want to go to war. It kind of spoils things, you know? And then just walks away.
My dad's all for this military buildup. He says our country can't be too strong. And we got to shoot the other side. We won't be pushed around. That's fine. But being strong means taking chances. Like this here El Salvador thing. Do you think there's going to be a war? I mean, like, I'm registered. They call up the draft. I'm in there, man. Dad says it's my patriotic duty. But shoot, I mean, you don't even get to choose a nice place. I mean, why do they have wars in Vietnam and Korea anyway? Why not someplace real neat, like the French Riviera or Bermuda? Well, you don't think there's going to be a war, do you? I wish my dad wouldn't talk about it all the time. My mom looks at me and starts to cry. And Dad says the army will make a man out of me. Look at that. Huh? I thought I was a man already. Dad was in the Korean War. He talks about boot camp and how he and his friends went off to Tokyo. Sounds like fun. But when I ask him, hey, Dad, what about combat? He dummies right up. Gets this faraway look in his eye. Changes the subject. I'll tell you one thing. You date a girl and start talking about maybe going off to war, and she gets real cuddly and affectionate. So I guess it's got its good points. Anyway, I'm not going to worry about it. I got college next year if I can keep my grade level up. I never got good grades. It'll be a tough 4 years. I just hope we don't have a war. It kind of spoiled things, you know what I mean?
It's this oddly moving moment, I thought. Like, I think individually, I think it's pretty good. Like I feel like if Nicolas Cage kept that on his acting reel when he was trying out in Hollywood, like, when he was, like, auditioning for roles and stuff, if he could, like, play that clip for people. Like,
just that one clip?
Just that one clip outside of, like, the rest of the show.
Yeah.
And he could just play that 3-minute clip, like, they would hire him. Like, that would be a good clip to have. Like, it'd be a good monologue. It'd be good, like, showing off your chops as an actor.
Yeah.
So to speak. Like, he's, like, it's a decent enough showing there where it shows, like, what his acting career could be.
Yeah.
And
His potential,
yeah. This monologue gets followed up on at the dance when he says to the girl he's dancing with, I'm shipping off for El Salvador tomorrow. Yeah. just to get in her pants.
Yep. He does say that, though, in the monologue.
He does.
When you mention it, the girls get all cuddly. Like, what? Yeah.
But he's not moving to El Salvador. He's just...
No.
He just says that to impress the girl, and then the girl hugs him, and then he makes this weird, like, Nicolas Cage face.
Yeah.
Where his eyes go, like, up over his head, and he's like,
yep. Bizarre.
And then after that, there's some... There's lots of dancing Nick Cage.
Yeah, there is.
In this show, particularly in the car wash, but also at the dance. There's a scene where he does, like, a solo thing. He does a split on the floor.
Yeah, good old Nick Cage.
Yeah. And then, I mean, that's pretty much it. Like, that's, like, everybody kind of gets an equal amount of screen time here. It's an ensemble show, so Nicolas Cage kind of, like, like he's
part of the cast.
Yeah, he's one of the first billed, but he's like one, like just kind of like part of the ensemble.
Yeah.
So in the end, Kevin got a date to the dance.
Good for him.
Yeah, it was the cheerleader, so very good for him.
Yeah.
Crispin and Jill look like they might make things work after all.
We'll never know.
Nicolas Cage might go to El Salvador.
or Stanford, maybe.
And all of Mr. O'Reilly's food was eaten.
Yeah. Oh, man. Jackie Mason.
Poor Jackie Mason.
What has he done?
Yes. And then Crispin has, like, one final monologue.
Mm-hmm.
Saying, like, you know, teenagers are people, too. Just think about, you know, next time you think about us, think, meh, hey. I wish that I was like that once.
Yeah, basically.
And then over the credits, Crispin Glover narrates the credits.
Oh yeah, that's and right.
And Nicolas Cage is credited as Nicolas Coppola.
Nicolas Coppola
in this movie, and Crispin Glover just goes, "It's like ah, it's me, Crispin Glover. Oh, here's my buddy, Nicolas Coppola."
Bizarre.
And it's weird because we're used to seeing him as Nicolas Cage, and so. The fact that he's credited as Nicolas Coppola is a little weird, and the fact that they draw attention to it is a little weird, too. How Crispin Glover just says, hey, it's my buddy, Nicolas Coppola.
My good pal.
Yeah. And then he says, see you soon, but you will not. So,
but that won't happen.
That will not happen, because you will. This will not be on the air anymore.
I wonder if this is really Sherman's fault. Maybe they dropped sponsorship.
Oh, I think what happened was... like, this was supposed to be in the Saturday morning slot. Like,
okay.
Like, this was supposed to be like a Saturday morning show for ABC. But instead, they maybe put it up in primetime. Like,
oh, no.
They put it up with the big guns, and it couldn't hang. It couldn't hang.
Yeah.
It was canceled.
And then it is what it is.
Yeah. So now it is this weird obscurity that I had never heard of before I decided to do this podcast. And I venture to guess most people who are not avid fans of either Nicolas Cage, Crispin Glover, or Jackie Mason.
Well, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, exactly. But in any case, I think that about wraps it up, right, Mike?
Yeah.
We discussed at length Best of Times, and mm-hmm. we have discussed Nicolas Cage's role in that show. So, thank you guys so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. For more of our thoughts on The Best of Times and other Nicolas Cage films, check out our work at filmbook.com. We do the Film Bookcast, where we will be discussing recent movies, so it's not just going to be Nicolas Cage stuff. And
although it could be.
It could be. You never know. You never know.
We'll find out.
Or you can follow me on Twitter at msmithfilmblog, and you can follow Mike where?
On Twitter at MDFilmBlog.
Exactly. And any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail, you can email us directly at podcast@filmbook.com. So please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. So just talk about The Complete Works. Talk about Film Bookcast. You can talk about one of my crazy TV podcasts. Who knows? We'd love to hear from you. Thank you guys for listening to the show so much, and we are out.